to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Israeli president holds historic meeting with queer activists, Canadian couples continue their quest for marriage rights, and new music by two lesbian legends and four Minnesota dykes. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 1st, 2001. Moshe Katsav this week became the first Israeli president ever to meet by his own invitation with a delegation of gays, lesbians, and transgenders. It was a great stride forward from Katsav's predecessor, Azer Weizmann, who met with some gays and lesbians only under political pressure after he'd made public statements disparaging them. The Political Council for Gay Rights solicited and obtained the invitation from Katsav and called this week's meeting historic. The six conferees said the president was sensitive as he heard them out on issues including the legal status of transsexuals, same-gender couples, and gay and lesbian parents and co-parents. Katsav told the group he'd be happy to help in the future if he could, but concluded by saying, "I thought it was important to meet you and hear what you have to say, though I don't see how I can help you." Before the meeting, Katsav had told reporters it should be interpreted as neither encouragement nor criticism for the group's aims. The Political Council for Gay Rights agrees that there is little Katsav can do for them at this time, but views the meeting as a sign of official recognition. At the meeting, openly lesbian Tel Aviv City Councilmember Michal Eden challenged the president to attend her city's Gay Pride celebration in 2002. He responded, "When you're mayor of Tel Aviv and you issue the invitation again, I'll be happy to accept." Eden replied, "You've given me a challenge."
The challenge of electoral politics is one gays and lesbians are taking up around the world. Taiwan's parliamentary election this week featured two openly gay congressional candidates for the first time: Independent Shang Ming-shu, also known as James Jan, and Chen Wen-yen, also known as Webster Chen. Taipei gay bar owner Chen's platform focused exclusively on equal treatment for gays and lesbians, but veteran gay activist Jan's campaign in the city of Kaohsiung emphasized economic and social reforms instead. Both finished last in their races. Taipei's Gender Sexuality Rights Association took an active role in the elections campaign. The group solicited well over 100 candidates signed pledges to support legislation for gay and lesbian civil rights and registered partnerships and received 35. The group went on to recommend 10 candidates, 9 from Taipei City and County and 1 from Hsinchu.
Openly gay Pim Fortuyn this week was elected leader of the Netherlands Leefbaar Nederland party, beating out a dozen other candidates with nearly 90% of the vote at the party's national convention. Fortuyn is a writer and former college professor who is often a guest on talk shows. He and his party have caused a stir in the Netherlands with their position that immigrant Muslim leaders who denounce Dutch liberalism, including the national acceptance of gays and lesbians, should return to their native lands. Muslims comprise about 5% of the Netherlands population. Leefbaar Nederland also seeks reforms in education, healthcare, and local elections. Polling shows steadily increasing support for the party, which went national only 2 years ago. The latest poll predicts it will take 10 of the 150 seats in parliament in the May 2002 elections, but at least one pundit believes that the Netherlands' high level of public satisfaction offers little chance for a party of protest.
In the U.S., openly lesbian Democrat Kathy Woolard won a citywide runoff election this week to become the city council president of Atlanta, Georgia. She's not only the first out gay or lesbian to hold that post, but the first woman. Woolard became Georgia's first openly gay or lesbian elected official when she won the Ward 6 city council seat 4 years ago, and she's used that position to advance gay and lesbian civil rights. Her Ward 6 has voted to replace her with another open lesbian, Ann Fauver.
But Spokane, Washington, lost its first openly gay city council member in a recount this week. Dean Lynch had been appointed to fill a vacancy earlier this year, and on election night appeared to have won his seat by a scant 9 votes. But the recount confirmed that absentee ballots gave a 49-vote edge to his opponent, Dennis Hessian.
But the biggest November victory for gay and lesbian civil rights in the U.S. is a vote that won't happen. After a decade of intensive lobbying, the state of Maryland had enacted gay and lesbian civil rights protections that were to have taken effect on October 1st. But a group called Take Back Maryland had petitioned for a ballot initiative to repeal that law, putting it on hold. The gay and lesbian civil rights group Free State Justice undertook a complex legal challenge to the initiative, and the courts found problems with thousands of the signatures Take Back Maryland had collected on its qualifying petition. Last week, Take Back Maryland formally conceded that it had no chance of winning the lawsuit, and Maryland's civil rights protections went into effect November 21st.
Gay and lesbian activists in the Australian state of Tasmania are claiming a David and Goliath victory in preserving their civil rights. The state government had been moving to amend the state Anti-Discrimination Act to exempt religious institutions. Weeks of intensive lobbying by the Tasmanian gay and lesbian rights group resulted this week in the state government scaling back those proposed exemptions dramatically. The government will not seek exemptions for religious-based hospitals, old age homes, and welfare agencies, and it affirmed that religious schools will not be allowed to discriminate against lesbi, gay, and trans teachers and students. Tasmania's Roman Catholic Archbishop Adrian Doyle said the government had reneged on its promises made to the church and threatened retribution at the ballot box.
There's been international criticism of some countries' unequal treatment of gays and lesbians. The European Commission issued a statement that praised Latvia's new labor law against discrimination, but specifically noted its failure to explicitly include sexual orientation as a protected category. The Commission said the omission violates a European Union Council directive. Although sexual orientation had been included in the Latvian Justice Ministry's original draft of the law, the parliament deleted it, and it was only lobbying by the Latvian National Human Rights Office that forced the inclusion of an open-ended clause that may or may not be interpreted by the courts to cover sexual orientation. If a test case should fail, Latvia will have to explicitly protect gays and lesbians before it can become a member of the European Union.
The United Nations AIDS Program's Regional Advisor for the Caribbean called for decriminalization of homosexual acts there. Advisor Ruben Del Prado said that gays and sex workers would not come forward to be tested, educated, and treated because there are laws against them. The Caribbean region is second only to sub-Saharan Africa in its HIV infection rate.
The Swedish government this week introduced a bill to make sexual orientation a category protected under laws banning incitement to hatred. The current criminal law against incitement covers only ethnicity and religion. The government bill would provide for prison sentences ranging from 6 months to 4 years.
The Canadian government this week announced its plans to add sexual orientation to the national law against incitement to hatred, also referred to as hate propaganda. Justice Minister Anne McClellan said there is unanimous agreement for the move among the nation's federal, provincial, and territorial justice ministers, but that it would not go on the legislative agenda for several months. The previous week, British Columbia's openly gay New Democratic Party Member of Parliament, Sven Robinson, introduced a private member's bill to amend the incitement law, saying, "It's critically important that society and leaders in government send out the strongest possible signal that hatred and violence directed at gay people is totally unacceptable." The move to amend the law has gained impetus from the widely reported brutal bashing murder of gay Aaron Webster in Vancouver. Sexual orientation is already included in Canada's laws providing for harsher sentencing for hate-motivated crimes.
Government ministers in Belgium vowed to push ahead with their plans for legal gay and lesbian marriages, despite an adverse opinion by the nation's top administrative court. That court, the Council of State, had rejected the government's bill on the grounds that legal marriage can only be a union between a man and a woman. But Deputy Prime Minister Laurent Onkelinx said, "I'll ask my colleagues to regard this opinion with astonishment and to set it aside."
And finally, some 5,000 life-size figures representing Australian heroes are decorating the grounds of the Parliament House in Canberra in an observance of Australia's centenary known as Peoplescape. Nominations were accepted from the general public, and at least 4 selected for inclusion represent the gay and lesbian community. Festival Director Robin Archer, Rodney Croom of the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group, and formerly of the Australian Council for Lesbian and Gay Rights, Gay Games activist Richard Hogan, and environmentalist Adrian Block.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 1st, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Coming up later in the program, Holly Near's songs and politics are still on the edge. Chris Williamson says she's risen from the ashes, and a new lesbian band's midlife music is bursting on the scene like a hot flash. But first,
love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
It's been about 2 months since the Supreme Court of British Columbia, Canada, ruled against 8 lesbian and gay couples who were seeking to overturn their country's ban on same-gender marriage. While the participants in that case wait for word on their appeal, marriage rights cases in 2 other Canadian provinces went to court last month. In Ontario, 10 couples are seeking the right to marry, with 2 of them represented by the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto. In Quebec, the case is brought by a single couple of longtime activists from Montreal. In this report from Heather Kitching of Queer FM in Vancouver, several of the plaintiffs and their attorneys talk about the different approaches in their cases.
Rennie and I met at a New Year's Eve party. I was into older men at the time, quite frankly. People that knew how to do things and were in charge and whatnot. And suddenly I ended up stuck with somebody that didn't know how. Everybody said he was after my money, but I had none, so that wasn't a problem. And it just happened, you know. And then suddenly, 20 years later, it dawned on us that we were living like married people. We were, in fact, married. Mm-hmm. And I asked him to marry me. His answer was, why not? We're couple.
Michael Hendricks and his partner Renee LaBeouf applied for their marriage license on September 14, 1998. They were denied because Canada, like most countries in the world, does not permit same-sex couples to marry. Michael and Renee, however, are one of 19 couples in 3 Canadian provinces currently involved in legal actions to overturn this prohibition. This November, courts in Ontario and Quebec held hearings on the lawsuits in those provinces.
Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married.
Joanna and Martha were presenting the case for civil licenses, and they started off with a very moving presentation about the fact that the case is about love and hate, and that in our system there's no hierarchy of love.
The principal argument advanced in all 3 cases is that Canada's refusal to allow same-gender couples to marry violates Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which specifically bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. In Ontario, there is a delightful twist. An argument advanced by the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto that the government's refusal to acknowledge same-gender marriages violates their freedom of religion. MCCT lawyer Douglas Elliott explains.
Our marriage law is based on the English law. England has a state religion. Ontario was established by Tories who fled from the United States and who subscribed to the notion of an established state church. And so in 1793, the first Ontario marriage law said that the only legally recognized marriages were Anglican marriages. In the 80s, we had the introduction of the Charter of Rights, which entrenched freedom of religion in Section 2A, and the Big M Drug Mart case. While it was argued in that case that the prohibition on Sunday shopping was, in fact, a purely secular law, the Supreme Court of Canada looked at the historical roots of the law and said this law was really based on earlier laws that enforced the state religious dogma. The Supreme Court of Canada said that any laws that enforce a particular religious perspective in this country offend Section 2A of the Charter, and that's a case on which we placed a great deal of reliance. The only logical reason for the bar to same-sex marriage is this historical Christian Anglican definition of marriage that has informed the law of Canada.
In Quebec, we don't really have any pre-Confederation rule about what marriage is and what marriage isn't.
Anne France Goldwater is legal counsel for Michael Hendricks and Rene LeBeuf in Montreal.
All we were attacking was the one law that did exist, which was a pretty fresh new provision in our civil code that was only passed in 1994 and said marriage must be between a man and a woman. So we rubbed our hands in collective glee and said, well, the province has no right to do that. Ever since Confederation, the power has been given to the federal government to make rules about marriage and divorce. So we said, heck, this is an easy case. Our federal and provincial governments did what they know how to do best, which is pass laws without letting any Canadian people know about the laws they're going to pass. And they passed a little law called S4, a federal law now, that said marriage must be between a man and a woman. Now, this particular law only applies to Quebec. So it's kind of a, should find the expression, queer situation.
Regardless of whether Canada's prohibition on same-sex marriage comes from Parliament, as in Quebec, or from court precedents, as in the rest of Canada, those who are challenging the ban need only show that it discriminates based on sexual orientation in order to make their case in court. From there, the onus shifts to the federal government, who, if they wish to continue the discrimination, must persuade the court that it is demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. Cynthia Peterson is the lawyer representing EGAL, Canada's National Queer Rights Lobby Group, in the case in Ontario. She outlines the position taken by the federal government in all three hearings.
The primary focus is that marriage just is heterosexual in its essence. And the government claims that that's true across all cultures and since time immemorial. And they tie that to a sort of limited definition of procreation. They claim that since heterosexual couples are the only couples that together can biologically produce a child, that that's a unique form of procreation that has to be supported in order to maintain humanity. The government's lawyers actually stated that baldly, that civilization would somehow not exist if we didn't have heterosexuals marrying and procreating.
When they heard that the federal government's justification for the distinction was procreation, fundamentally, I think the judges were remarkably unimpressed. I think they were hoping that there was going to be more to it than that.
I didn't know whether I was filled with dread or apprehension about what would be said. Would something cogent and brilliant be said that would so demolish arguments that would make it so evident what it is that the het population needs to continue to survive and function? And the government lawyers, who are so busy finger-pointing at each other, you know, that nobody ever actually bothered to say anything to explain why it's the end of the world as we know it if gays and lesbians can marry.
It is hard to sit there and listen to your government tell you that you're not a full member of the Canadian family, you're not as deserving of respect as other Canadians.
Joe Varnell is one of Douglas Elliott's clients. He and his partner Kevin Barassa were married in the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto on January 14th of this year. They attended the hearing every day and reported on it on their website, www.samesexmarriage.ca.
I think the justices were all extremely interested in the arguments, and they had all read the material. Their questions to both sides really asked them to talk outside of the big, broad, sweeping generalities and talk in specific terms. Some of the questions that they asked of our side were specifically, well, if we have to strike down the common law, which says marriage is one man and one woman, doesn't that mean that no one can get married? And they really wanted to focus specifically on the remedy. If there is discrimination, what do we do about it? To the other side, they didn't accept, A, the procreation argument. They wanted them to admit that gays and lesbians can have children, can raise children in loving homes. And they didn't accept the sky is falling or something bad will happen. They really wanted specifics. What bad things happen? As to a prediction, well, I'm hoping that the side of right, truth, justice, and light will prevail. I certainly think they're going to make a well-informed and reasoned decision. These were all very reasonable people, judging from the questions they asked.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
The decisions in both of these cases will almost certainly be appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada, where it's expected they'll be joined with the case from British Columbia for a single hearing. Again, you can find comprehensive coverage of the Canadian struggle for marriage equality at www.samesexmarriage.ca.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
The new music in this month's edition of Audiophile all comes from lesbians in their middle ages, one from a new band that plays up its over 40 status, and two from singers the community has treasured since they were part of the younger set.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God. I ain't afraid of your churches. I ain't afraid of your temples. I ain't afraid of your praying. I'm afraid of what you do.
This concept of terrorism is a very frightening thing, but I don't think the way to feel secure is to put more locks on the door, because at some point you have to walk out the door.
Those are the words of musician and activist Holly Neer, who spoke with us while on tour this past September. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. Holly Neer's latest CD, Edge, is yet another demonstration of her talent for blending a strong, progressive social conscience with crystal clear vocals and memorable melodies.
She loves a she, he loves a he, they're thrilled to be who they turned out to be. One may marry God, one may marry poor, curse all you want as I walk out the door. But kids are gonna love, gonna love, gonna love. Kids are gonna love, gonna love, gonna love. Kids are gonna love, gonna love.
You disown your child for being gay. The first thing people say is, do you know anything about being gay? I mean, you would disown your child, your beautiful child, for something you know nothing about? Why don't you find out what it means to be gay? Why don't you find out how other parents whose children are gay are feeling?
You can find out more about Holly Neer at www.hollyneer.com.
Takes all night.
A new Minneapolis area group called the 40 Ikes had great harmonies and clever lyrics to a blend of musical styles in their CD called Hot Flash. Group member Renee tells us about their unusual name.
The name of our band kind of came out of our experience of all turning 40 and sitting there and looking at each other and going, my God, we're 40, what are we going to do with the rest of our lives? 40 Yikes to us is the double entendre, of course, of 40 Yikes and also 4 Dykes, and so it really works for our band.
I was sitting drinking coffee at the local Five and Dime when a man sat down beside me and proceeded then to whine about his lady seeing women. Well, I got up with my coffee and I left him with this line. I said, tough luck, buddy. I said, it don't bother me.
You can find out more about the 40 Yikes and their CD Hot Flash at www.4dyikes.com. That's 4D-YKES.com.
Women's music legend Chris Williamson has risen like a phoenix from the very public end of her 20-year music and life partnership with Tret Fury. Her new CD is aptly titled Ashes.
I am standing on the threshold of my future and my past, when in the shape of changes, protection comes at last. It is hope that will sustain us even as we fall, as we paint our little primitive on the whitewashed cloister walls.
Indeed, this whole event is about resurrection, is about rising up from ashes of one's own life and remaking oneself all anew.
Ashes is a beautifully produced and introspective musical journey. It speaks of renewal and acceptance as well as loss.
We dive down into feeling and we come up friends. We dive down into feeling on the blue.
I honestly thought I'd never laugh again or be happy. That's not true. Happiness has come into my life in all shapes and sizes and forms, from friends and animals, and now a new love in my life, who's an old friend that I've known for 25 years. The universe, I think, presented me with this. It presented us to each other. I'm more in the present than I've ever been, and that's quite interesting.
You can find out more about Chris Williamson and her CD, Ashes, at www.chriswilliamson.com. That's CRISWilliamson.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041, or online at info@audiophile.org. That's info@audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
The beginning of the new millennium acquainted us with new voices to queer music and reacquainted us with some familiar voices as well. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Join us as we present our annual Audiophile Year in Review, a look back at our queer music favorites of 2001.
Coming the first week of the new year, here on This Way Out,
the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world, which are currently being matched by a grant from the Gill Foundation. For an important message about how you can help This Way Out stay on the air, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on KDHX St. Louis, Missouri, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, KAOS Olympia, Washington, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. All our best wishes for this holiday season, during which we hope you'll stay tuned.